Welcome. You're listening to Raw Health Rebel Podcast with Lisa Strabak. It's time to disrupt the current view of health and return to the raw basics that true wellness comes from within. In this episode, I speak to Jacqueline Dunn, who's a holistic health coach, nutritionist, hypnotherapist, and best-selling author of Mind Body Miracle. What a powerhouse of a guest to kick off the first edition of Raw Health Rebels podcast. Jacqueline went viral last year when she spoke her mind on the COVID-19 crisis and government actions. Her Facebook Live video was watched 2.4 million times, and she woke up one morning to 121,000 followers on her personal page. Jacqueline is a breath of fresh air, and we discuss how she found her voice and why she felt compelled to speak her truth. We reflect on the human need for validation and the desire to find one's tribe. We talk about her journey into natural health and her role as a health advocate for informed choice and the current work she's doing for the Safer to Wait campaign. We discuss parenting children in these times and how we can raise strong children. Finally, we chat through the future of healthcare system, her favourite homeopathy remedy, and why humanity needs to learn a greater level of acceptance. Well, just a dive straight in, if that's right, Jacqueline, but I really, really appreciate you taking the time to do this. I just want people listening to learn more about you. And one of the things I really want to chat about, if it's okay, about finding your voice, because I think it's a thing that a lot of people struggle with. I know I do personally. I think it's the time now where we can't sit on the fence any longer, and we have to choose a side, but just speak, voice our truth and our concerns. And I think particularly as a homeopath, there's that whole, it's a slightly ridiculed profession, so we're kind of used to staying in the shadows, and I feel like it's time to for everyone to come out, basically. I really respect everything you do. I've got your book, which I think everyone should read, because it is such a good intro into, well, it covers everything, you know, when you go down that rabbit hole, where to begin. It's great. But can you tell me in your sort of own words a bit about you?
Wow. Okay. So my journey into wellbeing started about 10 years ago. My mum was really poorly. She had chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and she'd been ill for 10 years. And she actually passed away in January 2013. But just before that, I'd been diagnosed with an autoimmune condition myself, pernicious anemia. But it wasn't my concern. All I was concerned about was kind of, as long as there was something to do to control it, pharmaceuticals, regular B12 injections, I was really focused on being a mum. At that point, I had like a 1-year-old and a 4-year-old, and making sure my mum was okay. Mm-hmm. And obviously she passed away in 2013. And my dad, my biological dad, my mum and dad hadn't been together for 30 years, died 5 days later. And both of them died of diet and lifestyle related conditions. So my mum had made the choice to smoke. I know now through my homeopathy studies that she definitely carried the tuberculin and miasm. So genetics have loaded the gun. She pulled the trigger unwittingly. And obviously then smoking was glamorized. I mean, I tell people that I've got photos of my mum smoking, heavily pregnant with me, ashtray on her tummy, smoking away, because we just didn't have the warnings and the knowledge. And, you know, you watch soap operas and they were all smoking away, and it just was completely different then. So she had a lot of chest infections, and she'd really sealed her fate. My dad was a long distance lorry driver, stopped at every single greasy spoon, was a smoker, obviously very sedentary. And when he wasn't working, he was drinking. So he obviously had a very unhealthy lifestyle. So both of them made choices that ultimately led to an early death. And that was a big wake up call for me, because they both were 64 when they died. And I suddenly was like, wow, that's my genes, that's my genetics. And what can I do to take control back, to empower myself, so that I'm not met with the same fate? I don't want my children mourning in their 30s and a mum. So I started to study nutrition to really heal myself because I was dependent on medication at that point. And I just learned so much and started to really develop a passion for it that before I knew it, I was qualified enough to have a career. And it's just kind of grown and grown from there. But slowly, it's not been an overnight success. I think when people that have been following me recently think, oh, video went viral and now she's got this huge following and really successful business. There were times that were really, really tough. And if I was not so passionate about it, I would have gone and taken a job elsewhere or gone back to what I was originally doing, which was accountancy, believe it or not. But I knew it was my calling. I knew that I just didn't want to do anything else in life. And I knew that I could help a lot of people as I'd help myself. So I just continued. And thank God I did, because I think never before have we been more needed.
Completely. And no, I was an accountant in a former life too.
Was she really? Oh,
Yeah.
how awful is
I know. I go on LinkedIn. I'm not on it anymore, but I used to see congratulate so and so for 25 years at Deloitte and just think, oh God, I want to like commiserate you. That's a, like you get less for
Exactly.
murder. No, it's great. And that's really reassuring to hear actually as someone that's sort of at the start of their career, you know, into alternate health, you know, that it doesn't necessarily happen overnight, you know, just to take continue. I mean, I'm so passionate about it. And do you feel that you've obviously had a big life event that made you take this path? Do you think people do have to have a big, you know, wake up call, or can they learn it by us telling them, or is it something you just have to go through yourself?
I don't think you necessarily have to have the big wake-up call, but what I do see is that a lot of people do have it before they make a big shift in their life. So I always say you often have to go through the worst times to land in the best times, dark before the light kind of thing. And that's why when I wrote my book, I dedicated it to my mum and said, I had to lose you to find me. And that is exactly what happened. I had to go through that and really not know who I was for such a long time. And then go through something to work out exactly who I was and what I was supposed to be doing. So I don't think that everybody has to go through that journey because I'm speaking to clients all the time now. Obviously, like attracts like. So the clients that I get generally say to me, I had a lady this week and she works in media and she said, it doesn't float my boat. It's not my thing at all, especially knowing what I know now. And I just don't want to do it anymore. I want to learn Reiki. I want to do reflexology. I want to go into nutrition. So she hasn't had a mass awakening as such. She hasn't gone through a really adverse event, but she's starting to put the pieces together that she got trapped onto a treadmill, like we've all been at some point. And it's not her. And if she wants to be on purpose and find the reason that she was brought here at this time, then she needs to look a little bit deeper. So yeah, I don't think you ne necessarily need to have a really big event. It's just that a lot of people do have that kind of shock awakening that makes them look a bit deeper. My sister did too, and it wasn't actually when my mum and dad died, funnily enough. That wasn't enough for her. She got cancer 5 years after that. So that's the what woke her up and made her reassess and change everything. And I believe the reason that she got cancer was because she didn't deal with the grief of losing my mum and dad. And obviously, we know with the work that we do that lots of physical illnesses are manifestations of undealt with emotion. Cancer, I believe, is a disease of suppression, whether it's suppressed emotions, suppressed illnesses through medication, it comes back sooner or later. That's definitely what happened to my sister, but that was her wake-up call. But yeah, there's people that don't have them and they still make changes.
And I guess actually, if nothing else, COVID lockdown has given society as a whole to have a wake up in itself, hasn't it? So that.
I've seen the biggest awakening through COVID. There's been a mass awakening, and people that wouldn't necessarily have followed me or listened to anything I had to say previously, in fact, would have completely dismissed it, are now really looking at alternatives, whether that be alternative healthcare, an alternative way of thinking, an alternative way of educating, an alternative way of eating, an alternative way of healing. They are starting to look outside the box because what COVID has done, which I'm actually really grateful for, is it's shone a really huge torch on everything that I have been bleating about for the last decade and been called a loony tune. And now suddenly people are going, oh, you've got a point here.
I love that. I remember just before COVID, actually, I was saying to my husband, God, I just wish, that the homeopaths sort of have this view of what health really is. The acupuncturists do. I think the chiropractors, all these pockets of people, but no one will come together. I said, it's like we just need something to make everyone come together. It's like,
Be
oh,
careful what you wish for.
completely. So that's great to hear, that more people are reaching out. And I think that's what I found at the beginning of lockdown. I was like, oh my God, I'm on my own in how I feel. And, went on social media and started to see actually there were other people that thought the same. And that brings us at me to sort of your video that went viral, which was amazing. How did you find your voice? Have you always been outspoken? What prompted you to do that video?
So I found my voice about vaccines first, and that was even before I'd even started the journey with what would happen with my mum, because my daughter was vaccine injured, and that's was she's coming up for 13. She's actually 13 in a couple of weeks. But when I took her for her 8 week vaccination, 6-in-1 DTaP, she had a convulsion 20 minutes after receiving her vaccinations. So she had the six, and then she had another two, rotavirus and meningitis, so 8 in one. And she was under birth weight, so she was a tiny little baby. So whether that all contributes. But that's what kind of woke me up to hang on a minute, what have I just given my baby, and what should I have done first and foremost? Obviously, what we don't do is we don't look into these things. I was busy, as I always say, researching cots and prams and car seats, and I never thought for 1 minute that I should be researching vaccinations. When I started researching, I honestly thought I was going to find out, and I truly wanted to find out that it was just a freak scenario, that it was just one in a million and it rarely happens, and I was just really unlucky. That's what I wanted to find out, because never ever did I want to look in that mirror that I possibly have contributed to an adverse reaction in her health. But that's not what you find out when you start researching. So I'd already started to become vocal. I think 4 years after I'd started researching vaccines, I started to speak out a little bit about it. Around that time, the Truth About Vaccines documentary came out, and I shared it on Facebook. A friend cull happened where everyone just dropped off your radar. I had really good friends saying to me, "Well, my children are not going to play with your children anymore." It was just insane. But what I realize now is that was training. That was training for everything that I then went through recently, when with all of that anger and hate, when my video inadvertently went viral. You can never plan for a viral video. I'd done lots of lives previously. I don't always do them on my personal page, because I've got groups where I'm kind of preaching to the converted, like-minded people. It feels a safe environment to say those things. But I just knew with the COVID stuff that there was no point singing to the choir. I needed to say things to people that kind of pattern interrupt people when they I've already seen all this stuff on the news, and you are then suddenly appear saying something completely different. It kind of go, they go, "Oh, hang on a minute, what's this about?" So I just was getting really frustrated. The children had just gone into out of school, so they were we're all in lockdown. Schools have closed, and I was thinking, why can't people see this? And then I thought, well, they can't see it because they haven't had the awakening that I've had. They haven't had the experiences that I've had, and you don't usually see those things until you've experienced it yourself, or somebody really close to you has experienced it. So I kept getting this really strong urge to speak, to say something. And then one Sunday, I just said to my husband, "I'm going to do a live. I'm just going to get it off my chest. I'll feel better. I know I will. And I'm going to do it on my personal page." And he was like, "Oh, you're going to get some hate." I was like, "I don't actually care at this point in time. It is what it is. I need to say it." And when I was doing the live, I could see hate faces coming up. And I think I said at one point, "I know I can see hate and angry faces coming up, but that's okay, because this is my truth. If it doesn't resonate with you, that's fine." Had a bit of a rant and went and walked the dog, came back, and I'd had 500,000 views in 45 minutes. And I was at that point, I was like, "Oh my God, what have I done?" And it just kept going and going. Like the next morning, it was on 1 million, and then it was 1.5, and then it was 2 million. And I was getting messages from all over the world. My phone was just blowing up. It's quite frightening, because you think, how am I going to manage this? Have I put myself at risk? Have I put my children at risk? you don't expect, because it's so anonymous, that you're sitting in your office with a screen, and you don't expect that you're going to nip to Tesco's and everyone's going to go, "There's that work mad woman." So yeah, it was a bit daunting at first, and I think I didn't eat for 3 days because I was just like
Oh.
such a state of shock. Every message that comes through, I was thinking, is it going to be nice or horrible? And then you just kind of go, do you know what? I spoke my truth. Other people might not resonate. I said a lot of things that they can go and check and research. I planted some seeds. If they want to then be abusive about that, then that says way more about them than me. Because I didn't say anything that wasn't true. I was talking about John D. Rockefeller taking over pharmaceutical and medical schools. That information is all out there. I was talking about certain studies that have taken place that have manipulated the food industry. That information's out there. People don't always like the truth, but it's still the truth. Just because people don't like it doesn't make it untrue. So rather, because they can't make it not true, they just want to abuse you because it makes them feel better. And it took me a little while to kind of get to grips with that and to accept that. But now it's literally water off a duck's back now. That the some of it is really hideous, really nasty. I get some really nasty comments, few and far between, I must admit now. But it happens, but it doesn't affect me anymore. It used to, but now I'm just like, oh, bless them. I don't think they were held much as a child, maybe. I don't know.
It's a reflection of their state completely, isn't it?
It absolutely is. Because personally, if I saw somebody talking about something on social media that I didn't resonate with, I would just scroll on. Or I might leave a comment saying, well, I don't really think that's right. And maybe you need to think about that, like I often do on Matt Hancock's page. But, I wouldn't get in their inbox and start calling them all the names under the sun and say that your children deserve to be taken off of you and all of that kind of stuff. Because it's just not me. If that's them, then I'm sending them love, because that's not a nice place to be, to have that much hate in your heart.
That's what I think. How miserable and toxic to have that anger when and why, trigger when you're triggered. I think it's a great opportunity to reflect. Why am I getting triggered? What do I need to process? No, that's and would you say that most of your feedback, though, you say is more positive now, rather than.
In fact, it's interesting because I actually get people come back to me saying, I blocked you at one point and I thought you was crazy. And now 6 months on, I'm thinking, I need to find that woman again because everything she said is happening, which is really nice and reassuring. But yeah, I think, everyone's on their own journey. Everyone's on a journey at a very different pace. I always say to people often say to me, oh, how have you got the courage? I've been doing this for 10 years. I've been speaking about these really emotive subjects like vaccines for 10 years. So I'm used to getting that animosity back. I know how to handle certain questions, because that's the other thing. Well, what do you say back to this? I've been doing it for 10 years. So I feel like it was my training. I needed to go through that to get me to where I am so I can stand strong with this is much more intense. So I needed that training. So often we're going through things that we feel are really detrimental and painful for us. But when you look back in hindsight, you go, oh, that's why I had to go through that.
Totally. How did you? I'm interested how you took that first baby step. It's not a baby step in my mind of talking about vaccines. My daughter had a vaccine injury. It was very, like you said, when I went down that rabbit hole, I didn't want to realize that there were lots of other stories like me. We get labeled crazy mums, and I have found that I haven't been able to speak until now, sort of publicly about it, because the venom and the hatred that you get, because people, if you open that little can of worms, everything, you start questioning everything. And I gave my dad the book Dissolving Illusions by Suzanne Humphreys, and he went, my God, Lisa, if this is true, what's in here, then it's mind-blowing. And I was like, it is, that's the thing. And that's why, you can get that hatred. So how did you start talking about that? Was it just something sort of within you, you know, that first step, I guess.
No, I was actually thrown into it by accident because I was very careful because I knew that people were very emotive about that subject. So I was very careful who I spoke to. And then there was a lady that I was speaking to who's quite like-minded. And I said, "Oh, no, I'm not going to vaccinate my children either anymore." And we got talking. And then she tagged me in something on Facebook. I didn't say to her, "I don't speak to anybody else about this." And she tagged me on something in Facebook, and obviously all my friends saw that and were like, "What do you mean you don't vaccinate your children? What do you mean that you don't think we should vaccinate you? Is that what you're telling people now?" And the whole thing, and I thought, well, cat's out of the bag now. I've got to run with it. I've got to stand in my truth because that is what I feel. And my response was, I would never tell anyone not to vaccinate their child. I would tell you to do your research because this is one subject that everybody's got blind faith in and they really shouldn't have. Because when you start looking at the facts and the stats and what is being hidden from us, you will be absolutely shocked and mortified, as I have been. And I left it at that. But yeah, I still got so much anger, friends call. People sending that friends sending messages saying that my children are not going to play with their children anymore, they can't risk it.
It's not, it doesn't make sense. Like, if your vaccine works, then what does it matter if my
I
child
know.
hasn't? I just don't.
I was just replying, going, "I'm just going to knock on my next door neighbor and make sure they're taking their contraceptive pill because I don't want to get pregnant." And they'd be like,
Oh.
"What? Just think about it for a minute. Just think about it for that little minute." Yeah, but that's what that really did help me to grow a pair because I was like a rabbit in headlights at first. Because talking about being triggered, the thing that triggered me the most was the fact that I wasn't accepted or validated anymore by these people. And these were a group of friends that looking back now, and I write about it in the book, I think your vibe attracts your tribe chapter. And I was saying that whenever I was around these people, if I was having a night out with the girls, I would always be half drunk before I went because I was so anxious about going out with them that because I always felt like not good enough because they judge people on what car they drove, how many holidays they had a year, how many designer items they had in their wardrobe. And I always felt less than around them. So I used to do things to alleviate my nerves. And so I was always seen as like the drunk one because I'd always turn up half drunk because I was so nervous and then get really drunk when I was there, which makes me sound like a complete alcoholic. But it really was just anxiety and nerves to be around these people, which of course you shouldn't feel like that if you're with your friends. And what I know now, because I do have a true tribe, is of course you don't feel like that with your friends. You can say what you want. It's a judgment-free zone. And people allow you to have your own opinions, and actually they're interested to hear them rather than shut them down because they're not the same as theirs. So that was a big learning curve, and it is that we since we're babies, we learn that we need validation and acceptance. We need it, we thrive on it. And that's why people are given certificates in school when there's a head girl and boy, and it's all about being validated and accepted by other people. But of course, because we thrive on that so much, we forget to validate and accept ourselves. And I'm having this conversation with my 13-year-old at the moment, saying to her that if you allow other people to validate you and make you happy, they can also take that away from you at any point. And then you're going to feel really sad, unhappy, and invalidated. But if that comes from you, no one can ever take that away from you. It has to come from you. So that was a journey that I had to go on, and I had to lose all of that in order to realize that it's not from other people that you get it. It has to come from you. And that was a lot of work. That was like a year's worth of soul searching once I'd kind of inadvertently spoken out. I didn't want to, but it happened. People dropped off the radar. I was on my own for a really long time, and it was only when I really started to feel confident in what my beliefs are and who I am that then your vibe does attract your tribe. You start to find other people that are exactly the same, and I have an entirely new set of friends now. Who it's not an echo chamber. We're all different, but we all respect each other too. So yeah, it's a hard journey to go on because we are tribal. We need to be with other people. And when people start falling away from you, as I'm hearing from so many people now with this whole COVID situation, the minute they speak out about not wanting to wear a mask or not wanting to have a vaccine, then they're losing people because as far as they're concerned, that person's selfish, and people are really outspoken about it, and it's hurtful because you thought you was accepted for who you are, not for what you believe in. And it's all of a sudden you realize, actually, they only like me if I'm the same as them. It's a tough journey, it is, but it's well worth it at the end when you realize that you've got enough power to stand up for what you believe in.
Totally. And this year has definitely brought me closer to my tribe as well, so I can relate to that. You know, if people are going to judge you, they're kind of not worth having in the first place. But that's easier said than done. I think the reality of it is really hard, but it's worth it in the end. Actually, that's one thing I wanted to talk to you about. You just spoke about your daughter's nearly 13. You know, I've got two daughters, and one thing I find difficult now is, you know, navigating the future and not trying to think too much about the future, you know, or to think positively. You know, do you have advice for parents at this time, and how to help navigate your children, particularly, you know, if you've got a 13-year-old? That's hard because she's in secondary system. I'm lucky mine are younger. What's been your experience there?
It's really tough because I think, like for the mask situation, I heard a lot of parents message me saying, my son or daughter doesn't want to wear a mask, but they also don't want to stand out, and they're really frightened to be different. And I've always tried to drum into my children, they'll tell you that my favourite saying is, you were born to stand out. So in a world where everyone else is trying to fit in, you were born to stand out. We all were, really, but we're all trying. It's that tribal instinct just to merge into the crowd. But how are we ever going to stand up for what we believe in if we just want to fit in with what everybody else is doing? So I've tried to really instill in them some really strong beliefs about standing up for your own belief system. Just a really simple thing, like at Christmas, my eldest was going to a Christmas party at school, and she had these shoes on, and she said, oh, I don't want to wear them. And I said, oh, don't you like them? Aren't they comfortable? She went, no, I'm worried what other people will think. And I said, well, then you're wearing them. And she was like, what do you mean? And I said, unfortunately, I'm the driver, and I'm not taking you unless you go in those shoes. She's like, but that's outrageous. You can't do that to me. I said, I can, because this is a life lesson. If you said to me, I don't want to wear them because I don't like them, or I don't want to wear them because they're not comfortable, fine, change them. But to take the shoes off that look amazing with your outfit that you really like because you're worried about what other people think, it's not happening. It's not happening. And we had the biggest argument, temper tantrums, tears. She stormed off when I dropped her off at the school, and she phoned me after about 15 minutes. Oh, Mum, I'm having a really good time. I just wanted you to know I'm sorry. And I said, anyone mention your shoes? She went, no.
I love that. That's a great, not to give in to it, though. That's hard.
Exactly. Sometimes you have to really push them, and you've got to be cruel to be kind. It's tough love, because them life lessons are vitally important, because what we're seeing now is a nation of people that don't have any balls. And it's not because it's not what they believe in. It's because they're frightened to stand up for what they believe in. And I just don't want to. I want to raise free thinking children. And the only way that I can really instill that in them is by being a little bit tough sometimes. Because, you know, I need to encourage them to have their own belief system. And when we was going back to school, obviously I had one that decided that she didn't want to go back to school and we're homeschooling. But my eldest said, no, I want to go back to school. Your friends are everything at that age. Mm. And I said to her, that's absolutely fine, but you've got two choices. You either go back mask free or you are homeschooled. That's the choices. And she was like, that's fine, I'll go back mask free. I mean, as part of her vaccine damage, she suffers, as you know, PANDAS, and she does have anxiety and panic attacks sometimes. We go through peaks and troughs of that. So you have to play the game with the schools a little bit. And I just wrote a letter saying she wouldn't be able to wear a mask. I'm going to exempt her because of anxiety and panic attacks. And they were fine with that. She's fine with that because she sees herself as having a reason rather than, you know, just trying to be obstinate. And that makes her comfortable. So it's finding ways around it that we can still stand up for our beliefs without having to stand out too much. So she's still not wearing the mask, but as far as she's concerned and all of her friends concerned, she's got a really good reason not to. But what we're finding now is if she goes into town on a Saturday with them, a lot of them take their masks off because, you know, it's that pack mentality again. It's that tribe. She's not doing it, so we're not going to do it.
That's really so, good to hear. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's the age I feel most for at the moment is the teenagers, because that social peer pressure, it's so difficult, isn't it? People, as you say, people want to fit in, that tribe mentality, but even more so as a teen. So I think that's amazing that she's gone back mask free. I'm lucky. My eldest is 10. I've told her if masks are there when you go to secondary school, you're either not going or you're not, you know, I said, there's absolutely categorically no way that you're wearing one. You know, I don't know. I think whether that madness will still be here next year. Who knows?
I know. That's the thing. Obviously, once we're coming up to school holidays, and then once they go back, we're going to be, because I have a 10-year-old, we're going to be applying for secondary schools for them. And are we going to get to a point where this is still continuing? And can I write another letter and say I have another anxious child? I don't think so. So, it's crazy that we're faced with these decisions. I just posted a video on my Telegram group of they've all taken their masks off in Israel now. I know it's because the majority of the country are vaccinated, but the joy on the children's face when the teacher said, you don't have to wear masks anymore. They pulled them off, they ripped them up, they were cheering. Aww. I actually cried because I thought that's how much they hated them. That's how much they were hating them. And they were just doing it because they were told they had to. And this is the really annoying thing, that people are complying, not because they have any belief in this or any fear about a virus. The majority of people are complying because they don't know how to say no.
Completely. And someone said to me the other day, I can't remember where I was going, into some like potentially stressful new shop that I hadn't been in. And someone said, why don't you just wear a mask? I was like, they said, be less stressful. I've never worn one. I said, no, it's far more stressful to leave my integrity and, you know, sacrifice my morals than it is to have, you know, potentially some abuse at going in. But it is, you're right. Most people will just go along with it because it's difficult, isn't it, to stand out.
It is again that validation. And I've had people say to me, I hate wearing a mask, but I would hate to be stared at in a supermarket even more. Why? Because you don't know these people. And why are you looking for validation from complete strangers? I couldn't care less. I just go in with a beaming smile. And if I see another non-mask wearer, it's like you want to hug them.
I wouldn't go run up and hide.
I often say to them, oh, it's lovely to see a smile. And they look at me like I'm crackers. Well, some of them don't. But I honestly don't mind because I just feel it's far too important of an issue, because we need to stand in our power with this. This ends when we start to collectively tip the balance of compliers and non-compliers. It ends when we say no. It doesn't end for any other reason. It's not going to end on the 19th of July, just like it didn't end on the 21st of June. I'm really sorry to break it to you, everyone that went out and bought a 19th of July outfit, a Freedom Day outfit. The Freedom Day is when you say it is. That's all.
Yeah, totally. One thing I wanted to ask you, just going back to sort of about making informed choices, I saw a great Instagram video. I think you did Instagram Live on the invite for the vaccine, COVID vaccine, and how it didn't enable people to make an informed choice. And I think like you, if you want to have it, then do it, but make sure that you've done the research yourself. What advice do you have? Like, where can people go? What can they look at?
So at the moment, strangely enough, I'm involved in a campaign called Safer to Wait. The Safer to Wait campaign is all about informed choices. It's not anti-vax. I've always said I'm not anti-vax. If I was anti-vax, how have I got a vaccine damaged child? Because I would never have gone near them if I'm anti-vax. I just have blind faith in a system that let me down. And that's want to happen to people now. And it may be safer to wait when we have more information, when we have more stats, when we have longer term studies. So we're giving out leaflets to children. The children's ones are these ones, which is about downloading an app on your phone that's in trial phase. Would you do that? There's a QR code so that it takes them straight to stats and facts from government websites. Then there's a parent one, the Safer to Wait, loads of information one on that, because we don't obviously want to override the parents by informing the children. We want to inform everybody so that it's not about changing people's minds. It's giving them the information so that they can decide, because that is body autonomy and medical freedom. My issue is, at the moment, we've got a lot of indoctrination going on in schools. I was sent a couple of songs that are appearing in their end of year show, and one of them is about wearing a mask and the other one's about a jab in your arm, and the school said, oh, it's tongue in cheek. But my question to the school is, are you going to balance that out with the other side? And then another lady said to me that her son's word in her spelling test was important, said the word, said a sentence to match the word, and the sentence was, it's important to get your vaccine. So there is a ruling, a judgment called the Montgomery judgment, which is all about informed choice. And that legal ruling exists because a lady had a procedure in a hospital and she wasn't told all the risks and side effects. And one of the side effects happened, one of the risks happened, and she was able to sue them for £4 million. And that's the Montgomery judgment. Now, what that means is, if you do not provide all the information for somebody to be able to make an informed choice, you are, there's a precedence, you're breaking the law. So I would put it to the schools, it's a safeguarding issue right now. If you are only pushing the one side and you're not explaining the other side, you're not talking about the fact that this is under emergency license only by the Medical Health Regulatory Authority. So you're not talking about the fact that this is a clinical trial until 2023. Anybody that's taking it will be participating in a medical trial. You're not talking about the fact that if you're pushing it to children, the average age of a COVID death is 84 and children have a minimal risk, and we're pushing our children forward because of asymptomatic transmission. But there's a study of 10 million people in Wuhan that states that asymptomatic transmission was little to nothing. So all of this stuff, if we completely get rid of all of the conspiracy theories, if we don't talk about any of the stuff that makes us sound like tinfoil hat wearers, and we just go with the government stats and facts, which are all there on the Medical Health Regulatory Authority website, the Pfizer website, the AstraZeneca website, the government.uk website, the yellow card reporting scheme. All that information is there. It's just pointing people in the right direction, which is why these leaflets are important, because we can start dialogue with people. We can start saying to people, you know, I'm standing here, I'm not being paid to hand out these leaflets. I have absolutely nothing to gain and probably a lot to lose, because you're going to get abuse. But I want you to make an informed choice, because I have been in a position where I didn't make an informed choice and paid greatly for it. Nowhere near as huge as some people pay for that, but I don't want other people to make that same decision. Just allow them to have the information. So keeping things very basic, I've just done some training for leaflet distributors, and one of the things I said to them was, if you just say to people that you're not being given all the information, the first question they're going to say is, but why aren't we? And rather than go, because the government are tyrannical, we're being tiptoed into a totalitarian society, they lied about everything. Every interview is going to want to say that. But if you just say to these people, the government are under pressure to find a solution. No one can deny that. Businesses want to open. People want to see their families. People want to go on holiday. People want to hug their grandma. The government are under pressure to find the solution. The solution is the vaccine. If the solution is deemed to be flawed in any way, we're in trouble. So they can't let you see the flaws. That's why they're keeping them in the background. So it's really important for you to go and see, okay, thank you, BBC, for telling me all this information about how wonderful the vaccine is. But now I need to go and find out, because you're not telling me, are there any adverse events? How many people have died? What's happening with these blood clots? What are the ingredients? What testing is it? Has it been fully approved? When does the trial end? All of these things need to be found out by us, because you're definitely not going to find out about it on mainstream media. So that's what the leaflet's about. And this is just about starting to open dialogue with people, staying out of the realms of the conspiracy theories. And I'm using that term really loosely, because a lot of this stuff is not conspiracy at all. It's still fact. But if you're speaking to people that are very much believers of the mainstream, they're not going to be ready to hear some of that stuff. So if we direct them to government websites, facts and that's the, which they are already going to be believing in, and they see that there is definitely another side to this, that we need to be cautious. I mean, usually anything pharmaceutical that's released, I think there's 10 deaths and it gets a black box warning, and 50 deaths it gets pulled from the market. We're now on 1,295 deaths, 922,000 adverse events. Why have we not pulled it yet?
Do you know what? You are absolutely spot on when you say actually that the answer response to people that you can give is the government are under pressure to find a solution. That is just completely bang on because people are often like, well, why they don't want to kill us off? You know, what they don't want to, who are they? You know, stop with your conspiracy theory. But that is absolutely completely right. It's a business sort of thing. They need to get there, they need to, yeah,
And
open up.
usually that's when people go, but why, people go Google Agenda 21, look at Agenda 30, look at the Rockefeller manifesto, and people are like, whoa, and you've lost them. You've completely lost them. But who can argue with the fact that the government are under pressure to find a solution? They are. And once the solution appears, which is the vaccine, they're not going to want to see any flaws in it. Why would they do that? They cannot let you see that, because then the solution is gone and they're back under pressure again. So we have to keep things really, really basic in terms of the information that we're providing people that are newly awakening to this, or not awake at all, and we just want to make sure they make an informed choice. I'm going to be hit with animosity. I know I am. But that's okay, because if it stops just one child, for a parent makes that decision, or a child who is, they're going to be exercised guilt competence, and they ask the child if they would like to make the decision, and they have looked at that leaflet, they've used the QR code, and they've decided actually it is safer to wait, then I'm happy. My work is done.
That is something that actually I find frightening is what they seem to have changed the consent form now with the Gillett competency, where I know it was always implied that a child could override, but I don't know how much that happened in practice. But the forms have actually changed, and they specifically say, don't they, that if the child's deemed competent, you know, they can make that decision. I don't think parents are aware of that, are they?
No, most parents, whenever I've posted about Gillett competence, which before COVID was always around the HPV jabs, because they use that predominantly in secondary schools, year eight, when they start HPV. And not, I don't know every school that's been using it, but I do know it has been used in certain secondary schools across the UK. The parents are not aware of it. Anytime I've mentioned it, they're like, what's Gillett competence? What does that mean? But I haven't given consent. It doesn't matter. They can still override the consent. In fact, when my daughter's HPV jab came round, I didn't even send the consent form back, because I said to her, it's a useless exercise, because regardless of what I put on this piece of paper, you can override it. So what I need to do is empower you with all the information for you to make the best choice you possibly can. We literally spent the whole weekend. We watched the Sacrificial Virgins book, film. We looked at the book, Solving, not Solving Illusions, Shattered Dreams by Christina England, which was about the HPV trials and how they took people off of the trial that had an adverse event and destroyed their notes to make the trials more favourable. That was Gardasil that did that. Brandy Vaughan brought all this to the surface, and then she started the charity Learn the Risk, and has paid with her life for that, I believe. So I let her know all of this information, not to say to her, you can't have this vaccine, to say, when you go to school, I've heard about schools showing a video that shows a girl dying of cervical cancer. And then they say you are able to override your parental decision. So you're going to see in school all the positives. It's my job as a parent to balance that and show you the other side of it, so you can make an informed choice. So we spent the whole weekend looking at all of that stuff. And at the end of the weekend, we role played. And I was going to her, okay, Angelica, you know you can override your parental consent. And she's like, but I don't want to. Yeah, but you know that you end up with cervical cancer if you don't have this. No, that's it's just a virus. We're having this role play. It was ridiculous, but worth it, because I didn't want her to go to school that day. I wanted just to keep her off, and you know, it's mother's intuition to just go, no, keep her in a bubble. But I have raised free thinkers, and sometimes that goes against me. And she's like, no, I will go to school, I will stand my ground. But she did, and she said no successfully, and thank goodness she did. Three children did collapse that day when they received the vaccine. Very
That
common
seems,
behavior.
yeah, I've heard that that is common as well. I know my friends have said the same. And actually, my friend, very good friend's daughter, she said no on the form. Her daughter went in that day and they did try to line her up to have it done. And it was because she was strong enough. She said, no, I'm not having it. But I think if you're a little bit, that age, wanting to comply and just not strong
Exactly, yeah.
enough.
Fitting in again, following the pack, following the tribe, wanting to have that validation. I mean, my daughter still had all questions from her friends. Why aren't you having it? You know, it doesn't your mum worry about that you're getting cervical cancer? She did actually come out of school that day and completely broke down, and she said, "I am so angry that people don't get all the information. Why don't they get all the information?" And I'm like, "Well, that's what we need to change."
Totally. And I think, look back to my own example of when, my daughter had a vaccine injury. I wasn't given, I mean, I didn't look into it. It was the flu spray, and I thought, oh, it's just the flu, like almost in my head, because it was the flu spray, it felt like it wouldn't have had as much side effects, which is just crazy. But that's how, when you're in, denial, that's how it works. If I'd been given facts and said, there's a chance this might happen, I probably, back then, I probably still would have gone ahead and done it. But at least I could have looked back and thought, well, Lisa, you made that decision. You had all the information, you weighed it up. Yes, there was a risk, but you decided. I was so angry for so long and angry at myself, upset at myself that I hadn't researched this. And I think that's how I feel. I just want people to know that there is a risk. People aren't speaking up for the fun of it, but there's nothing to gain by saying, do you realize that there are side effects? So I feel really passionate that people just need to make their own mind up. And yeah, there's risk to everything. You need to weigh up whether or not it's a risk you want to take. But people just don't. My daughter actually was shown the, I don't know if you've seen the news round video.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was shown that, and yeah, it's all, I mean, it's completely false propaganda, isn't it? I think it's
And isn't
shocking.
that the lady from Imperial College London who is speaking on it? Sfrivi, her name is, oh, I can't remember, but she's Imperial College London, I'm pretty sure. So Oxford College, Imperial College London, all funded by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Again, if you're going to do that, we need to counterbalance that as well. There needs to be the other side. We can't just have this pure propaganda, one-sided journalism, because it is so agenda driven, and it will end up with very dire consequences for some people. And that's what I keep saying when I did this Zoom for the people handing out the Safer to Wait leaflets. I said, if we don't do this, I'm really sure more children will die. More children will die because they don't have the information. And whenever is it reckless to get information to make a decision? It's not. That's not reckless. That's sensible.
Totally. I
How are you
hope
going to
that.
a hotel without checking on TripAdvisor?
You know what? I think it's because people don't want to know deep down. Like they
So
know
it is.
deep down, but they don't want to, because once you go down there, your whole world literally implodes in many
It's
ways.
nothing only to go on. It really is. And there are times where I just wish I was in blissful ignorance and had taken the blue pill. That's, you know, that's not the choice I made. And now here we are.
No going back, is there, once you've
There really
been red
isn't.
pill.
There really isn't. That's it. You're there now. But there will be times along that journey where you just think, "Oh my God, why did I even start this?" And I've said on many videos, I went down the rabbit hole, and at times I wish I never did. But you know, everybody ends down up down it for a reason. So you've got to embrace that and find a purpose for being there. And my purpose was to help other people to make informed choices.
And what a brilliant cause that is. What do you think, like in terms of the health system, very at the moment it's very much health comes from an external thing that you take or you put in you, rather than actually, it's something that's from within as well. What do you see the future of the health system, or what would you like it to look like, maybe, rather than what do you?
I think every big system is breaking down now. That's another positive of COVID. We're having to break it to build the new. Ideally, what I would like to see is that people take responsibility for their own health. What the system we have at the moment is extremely disempowering. We hand our health over to other people to be saved. And of course, it doesn't belong to other people, it belongs to us. Doing it that way means that people are not taking full responsibility in terms of how they eat, how they sleep, how stressed they are. They're just very reactive. So they're waiting until there's an issue and then they go and find someone who can fix that issue. Unfortunately, that is where medicine is falling down more and more often now. Issues can't be fixed. They can just be masked. They can just be silenced. They can just be hidden. And that's why we end up with people in our offices saying, please help me. I've tried everything and I'm not getting anywhere. And that is because, medicine is not, it has a place. I'm not anti-medicine. In fact, I'm not anti anything. I'm pro-health. But, I think that medicine comes into its own in very acute situations, emergency situations. If I was, God forbid, in a car accident, I know that the emergency medicine would be incredible. But for chronic conditions, we should be taking our own responsibility for that. And we should be able to educate people on how to do that, because that's a massive part that's missing. And in the schooling system, which is another system I believe needs trashing and building up again, we need to be educating our children on things like, well, all well-being things. So nutrition, how to eat, how to cook. What most children leave school not understanding what a protein, fat, or carbohydrate is. A lot of children, you show them a vegetable, they have no idea what that particular vegetable is, but they can name every logo, including McDonald's and Burger King, Kentucky Fried Chicken. That's a sign of the times. And that it goes a long way to explain why we do have an obesity crisis, why we do have children now being diagnosed with diabetes and epilepsy and autism, ADHD, and all of these other conditions that 50 years ago were not seen at all, not to the extent they are now, but definitely not in children. I was looking at a picture of a beach in the 1940s and a beach today. And the beach in the 1940s, there was not one obese person on this beach. They were all very lean. And then you look at the beach today, and you can tell that these are very unhealthy, inflamed, and in the main, overweight people. And that is down to the fact that we don't have the education. We're far more sedentary than we used to be, and our food is absolutely hideous now and nutrient depleted. And anytime that we get ill, we just go and get a pill to fix it. So all of this has really got to change, and it's a mammoth task. Sometimes this is what causes sleepless nights for me, because I just think, oh my God, how are we going to get to where we need to be? It's such a massive task. And I was saying to my eldest daughter the other day, I don't think I'm going to see it in my lifetime. I think that it's going to start. But for where the change needs to get to, this is a task we're going to have to hand over to another generation to continue, which is why I was saying to her, you should really do what learn what mummy's doing. You should really start doing alternative therapies, because that's where the future's going to be for healthcare. I really see that, because people have completely lost faith in our NHS system. And as I said, I think it should be kept for emergencies. But we can't continue to use it for health. It's not health. It's not a health service. It's an emergency service.
Yeah, completely. And that, and you sum it up actually. It's treating illness, isn't it? Even if you go with something like, I had eczema years ago. Obviously you put loads of steroids on before I knew better. It would just come back as soon as I stopped the steroids. But true healing isn't always comfortable either. Like when I started using homeopathy for my eczema, it flared up, but I knew that it was because it was working, and I haven't had eczema on my hands now for years. But it's not always, you have to kind of do that work as well. I think sometimes with when you need to get yourself out of lots of layers of chronic disease, it's
Yeah,
not
but that's
always plain
another
sailing.
form of brainwashing we've had when it comes to health, is we believe that if we're not well, we go to the doctor and really quickly we start to feel better. All your symptoms disappear. Amazing. We've obviously just pushed it deeper into the body, because these things return often. And true healing is when you're cleansing it. It's not going to be an issue in the future. And I'm always explaining to my clients, it's very likely going through this protocol that you're going to get worse before you get better. And it's actually a very positive thing, because it's a detox reaction and you're peeling back the layers and old illnesses will reappear. And sometimes that's, oh my God, you've made me worse. I haven't had this rash for 6 years and all of a sudden I've got this rash. But it's like an onion, and all these things you've suppressed, layer upon layer of things you've suppressed, we're going to start peeling them back, so they're not going to be there at all anymore. And that's why a lot of people are reluctant to go into the realms of alternative therapies, because they don't get that instant quick fix, because we live in a fast food society where we just want everything now, now, now. Order online, it arrives the next day. Hungry, go for a drive-through. Want to get better? Go and get some antibiotics. You know, that's where we live now. And all of this needs to be broken down, which is, that's why I think it's a mammoth, mammoth task.
It is. But there are more people, I think, looking for those alternatives, which is great. But even there's the education, as you say, even within like patients that I'm getting through, they still kind of come with an allopathic mindset. They think I'm going to give a pill and it's all going to magically go overnight. And it's like, sometimes it does happen, you know, homeopathy is amazing, but you know, normally it's still the body healing itself. It's not, it's a process. And all the emotional, like you said at the start about cancer often having an emotional cause behind it, you know, you sometimes have to deal with some hard stuff along the way. You don't have to, but if you really want to get better, I think sometimes a whole lot of stuff has to come out.
But it's really rare though for a doctor to, you go in with an issue and for them to say, you know, what's been going on in your life in the last year, what could have possibly triggered this. You don't often get asked that. Very rare do I ever have a client say to me, oh yeah, my doctor asked me all these questions. No, not at all, never. So we need to really reframe everything about healing. It's starting. It's definitely starting, because I've never been busier for a start. And I know other alternative practitioners that are saying exactly the same, whether that's because you just can't access traditional healthcare at the moment. It's really hard to. But what it means is I'm getting a whole new wave of clients that wouldn't have ordinarily entertained what I do, but they're starting to travel down a road now and getting results that they would never have got. So there are a lot of positives to this situation, because it started to create an awakening and an evolution that was very needed.
Yeah, and that's how I'm determined to look at it now, on the positive side. You know, I spent a lot of last year feeling quite down about the whole state of the world, but now I'm like, no, this is absolutely the opportunity for us to change for the better. Can I ask you, I'm conscious of time, I just want to ask you two other questions, if that's all right.
Of course.
Is that your dog going off?
Yes, yeah, right? Simon's at the door. She wants to go and say hello, no doubt.
I'm surprised mine hasn't gone off, actually. She's normally barking away. Just want to know, you're using homeopathy now as part of your practice. Do you have a favourite remedy?
Oh, wow. That's really hard, because obviously they're so vast.
Yeah.
The one that I have started to use on my entire family, and it will make sense why it fits the entire family when I say it, is tuberculinum. Because I know that had my mum had that remedy, we may have seen a different quality of life, maybe even a different quantity of life. And I know, because I use bioresonance here, so I can see that it's something that we carry. Myself, my sister, my children all carry this as a miasm. So we have been using it, because I now can empower my children so that they won't have to pass it on to their children. So we can break that mold, which is so incredibly powerful.
Yeah, I love that. Wouldn't it be great if we could all heal ourselves before we have kids?
I know.
I use a lot of tuberculinum in the house as well. We're very tubercular. So yeah, I love that remedy. And then just on a final note, if you could have like one wish, I ask everyone this, it's good to get people's different takes. One wish for humanity, what would it be right now?
Acceptance, I think. So not the fact that, you know, we all have to have exactly the same opinion. It's just that we can accept the decisions that other people make. And that really comes back to body autonomy, which is an absolute core value of mine. So, you know, if you want to be vaccinated, that's absolutely fine. But please don't push it on me. If you want to take that medication, that's absolutely fine. But don't force me to. If you want to wear your mask, it's just acceptance. You know, we're all completely different. And I think if we lived in a world with far less judgment, that would also be far less anger and far less war. It's just about accepting other people for their beliefs, their belief system. And it would be a far more respectful world if we were able people to do that. So much anger right now. All coming back to the point where it's just down to the fact that if you don't agree with me, I'm going to get angry with you. Just accept that we can, and I've said to people, we can agree to disagree. It's fine. No, we can't, because facts are facts. It's like, oh my God, this is just butting your head against a wall. So humanity needs to be much more accepting, and that within that we would have body autonomy, medical freedom, the right to make informed choices, more respect. But yeah, that would be my wish, if people could just be more accepting of each other.
Yeah, no, I love that. Thank you. And people that want to know more about you or follow you, where's the best, I'll put links on the bottom of the podcast, but where's sort of the best place to follow you or find out more about you?
My biggest following is on Facebook, but I'm constantly banned on Facebook. But I'm just Jacqueline Dunn on Facebook. And when I'm on there, great. But I'm on my third 30-day ban in about 3 months. it is what it is. But other than that, Instagram is I am Jacqueline Dunn. I've got a Telegram group that's also called Jacqueline Dunn. I'm rebuilding my website at the moment because my business has evolved and changed so much. But that's mindandbodydetox.co.uk.
Thank you so much. It's been so lovely to chat. I really appreciate your time.